All right, good morning, everybody. In my capacity as chair for 2016, and until such time as this board organizes itself, which is item number 4 on our agenda today, I will officially call this meeting to order. This is 10 a.m. regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. And before we get to the Pledge of Allegiance, which is always first on our list, I just did a little quick math as I was sitting here watching the swearing-ins. So January 2nd of 2010, if you combine the years in office of all eight of our elected officials, it was 122 years. If you combine the years in office of our 8 elected officials as of today, it's 42 years, and 22 of those come from Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald. There clearly have been some huge changes. In fact, on January 1st, 2010, now 7 of the 8 elected officials are new from January 1st, 2010 to today. Truly is a new era in Story County, and I believe an exciting one. Board, before we go to the pledge, I want to make a request that we move one item, additional items number 5. So this is V under additional items, Roman numeral 5. I'd like to move that up to first on additional items for 2 reasons. 1, we'll have Jerry Moore up for all the public hearing items. And 2, clearly we have a long agenda today. We deal with 1 item from the public early, and then I'd like to deal with this 2nd item from the public as first on additional items if there's no objection.
None.
Laura, you found that? All right. With that, would everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First, public comment number 1 is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody who'd like to bring something to our attention? As always, I believe this board will continue our long-standing practice of, if the public has a comment to make while we're deliberating something, generally the microphone is wide open and we invite you to come up. But if there's anything anybody would like to say now, now's a great time to do it. All right, seeing no one moving the microphone, I'll move to the next item, which is organization of the board. 2 components of this, election of the officers of the board, so that's chair and vice chair, and 2, to set a day and time for regular meetings.
I have 1 question. Marty, you're serving on the school board still until May. Do you feel that you would also be able to pick up a vice chair capacity in the event that Rick wouldn't be able to serve for a few days?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to nominate Rick Sanders as chair and Marty Chitty as vice chair for this year.
I would second that.
Promotion and second. Discussion. Loris.
Aye.
Hart.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. The board is now organized.
Slide this back in. Are we going to set a date time?
No. Somebody get this slid back in. There
we go. I would move that we continue our regular board meetings at Tuesday at 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. with the option to modify our schedule as we may see fit to do.
I second.
Outstanding. A motion and a second. I want to make 1 note. This year, July 4th falls on a Tuesday, and the Tuesday after Christmas, if later in our agenda we deem that a county holiday, we'll have to keep those 2 dates for sure in mind. Okay. Further discussion?
Aye. Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. I got to decide whether I'm going to use last names or first names. I've gone 2 ways already. We just got started. Next item on our agenda is receival of petitions submitted by Southwind LLC and discussion and consideration of further proceedings. Al Copeland. So, as Al walks the microphone, about a month ago, Al came to us. He's part of a group that is trying to develop some homes here in Nevada, or just outside of Nevada, and is struggling with how to get those homes served by water. Al found a section in the code that I was previously unaware, which gives the county the authority, if it can be deemed that rural water cannot fully serve the proposed development, the county supervisors have the ability to sever ties between rural water and that area. And at that point, we had no formal petition, so Al's here today to rectify that.
Good morning.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning.
Start by introducing yourself, Al, and let us know your relationship to all of this.
I'm Al Kochler. I reside at 1600 South Loyola Street. I'm also a town up on Main Street. I've been here for almost 50 years. Is this phone on?
If it's green light, you're good.
I live just out of town, and there's approximately to the north of us, it was original 80 acres. We bought 25 of that here 12 years ago. We just finished buying another 7 acres as a buffer to the north of us, and then the other 38 acres came up for sale last summer, which Jim Griever, the four of us, Jim and his wife, myself and my wife, we purchased that other 40 acres. And we purchased it with the intent of having it annexed to the city of Nevada and start development on it. We have hired the Fox Engineering firm to go ahead with the development plans and so forth. And we are reluctant to keep it in the county, probably for one major reason. We all hear about water contamination, and I really don't want to have 25 septic tanks to the north of me, which could further contaminate our water. So we went before the city of Nevada. We have been approved by planning and zoning. We have gone before the city council. We have been approved for annexation by the city of Nevada. With one exception, we need to have the water rights to this 40 acres. So we have been approved but not approved. So we have hired Tom Cahill as our attorney to try and get, because we tried negotiating ourselves to no avail. We had a meeting at City Hall with Rural Water. Jim LaPlante, the president of Rural Water, came to that meeting. I offered to write a check that night for the water rights. He refused. Basically, but at the same time, it came out that there's two things. They can provide water to the 40 acres, of which the shutoff is right to the corner of our property. It does not go north of our property on South 11th Street. The shutoff is right there. That's where the water line's in. So, and I think it's just a 4-inch at that time, at that place. I think there's either a 6 or an 8-inch about a mile south of us. So, what it boils down to is that they can supply the water. They have the pressure to supply the water. They do not have the flow to provide fire hydrants. Okay? And it seems to me that we have this development we need, and especially if we're going to have 64 lots out there, we need some fire protection. So consequently, that is our problem. The other problem is Central Iowa Water has refused to sell us the rights. Okay? So, and the city of Nevada has refused to join in partnership with Central Iowa Water. So we have at one thing, the Freebergs and I, we don't care who in hell supplies the water. We just want to get this development going. Okay? Whether it's Central Iowa Water or whether it's city in Nevada, we don't care. We just don't want, we just need water, but we also need fire protection. So boils down to we're butting heads right now. We're at the end of, I just told one of the council members, this is our last stand right here. And I hate to feel like General Custer, but I don't know who else to feel like right now. So we are at an impasse because we got the city on one hand, we got Central Iowa Water on the other hand. And Central Iowa Water has told us they do not want to sell these water rights. However, it seems to me that every time you hear about rural water, and I've been on the economic board now for about 6 years, so I understand what is happening here, but there was an article in the paper about a month and a half ago. That's wonderful. And maybe you said it, maybe you haven't. Basically, what it boils down to, I would have it, there was a lawsuit between the city of Dubuque and Central Iowa Water, the exact entity that we are dealing with right now. And evidently it come to a final that City of Dubuque is going to be buying out all the rural water rights around the City of Dubuque, which evidently is, it probably is a little bit larger than the city in the Bay. Okay? And agreed to buy those for $4.1 million with a radius of 2 miles from the city. So when rural water comes back to us and say they're not selling any more rights, they're not exactly being truthful in this situation. Okay? They're selling rights. Now, why they have a love of this 40 acres just south of town here, I have no idea. It is a nice location, but we just want to get this thing settled. We are prepared to write a check if they will come to the table, but if they don't come to the table, we found this little statute that was, I think, 1970. Okay? This little statute right here basically gives the Board of Supervisors the right to detach a piece of property from a rural, from a water district, where it just says district in the code, from a rural water district if the district cannot adequately or economically provide water. Okay? So, they can provide water for the houses. They can't provide it for the fire hydrants. So, basically, it's up to you folks on the board to determine whether, this is in my opinion here, it's up to you folks on the board to determine whether Central Iowa can adequately and economically service this 40 acres, which includes the fire hydrants. Because they basically have said they can't without the help of the City of Nevada. And right now, the City of Nevada, when the DuPont cellulose plant came into existence, I was on the board, I was on the NEDC board at the time. There is a spot out by the, correct me, there's how many people here from the city, okay? Correct me if I'm wrong in any of my statements here. That there is one location where the city, where Central Iowa Water can connect to the City of Nevada, and that is out by the DuPont plant, the cellulose plant. That is the only place. Any other place where they would like to connect to, the City of Nevada has to give their okay. And in my discussion with the City of Nevada officials, basically they will refuse to give to connect with the Central Iowa Water for this purpose. Now, in talking with Mr. Sean from the city, basically it's because the two waters are not compatible. Is that correct, Sean?
Sean, if you're gonna say any more than yes or no, come up to the microphone for us. Thanks. The little square thing sitting on the desk, if you just speak toward that, we're good. Start by introducing yourself.
Sean Cole, 1018 4th Street, Nevada, Iowa. That is correct. Also, to be able to hook up to us, the part out by DuPont, there was a considerable expense at the city's expense to put a building out there, put a SCADA system in, put the valves and the meters in that we could monitor the amount of water that they were using and stuff like that. So it's not just the water, it's expensive that. We put a spot out there for them to hook up to. If they wanted to do another one, it would be a considerable expense to the city to place to get another spot
it's
out.
It's not as easy as just having them tap a line and start to pull water.
Correct.
Thank you.
So basically, hearing this information and the other fact that we've got an impasse here, we did find this little statute, and I believe the statute was written especially for our situation here. I do not understand, I'll be honest with you, I do not understand why other cities have not utilized this situation, because I know Ames has had tremendous problems with Central Iowa Rural Water. Okay, we have had various problems with Central Iowa Water. And so it seems to me we're giving away a hell of a lot of money here when we don't have to do that, when we got a board that is capable of detaching of completely detaching a piece of property from their district and so forth. So
Al, let's start getting the chase on this. So that all begins, that process of this board considering whether to detach, as I understand 357A, that process starts with a petition from the landowners, and that's what you're here for today, is to submit that petition to sever the rights with Central Iowa Rural Water for this piece of property that you addressed.
Right. And I submitted a petition approximately 2 weeks ago. I gave it to Supervisor Chitty, and you were on the phone at the same time. So you have the petition
right in
hand and so forth.
And so let's start with this. So this doesn't do anything other than establishes that we have, in fact, received the petition. Let me have a motion from one of you two acknowledging receipt of the petition from the landowners.
I'll so move.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on that motion?
I have a question.
Sure.
I do.
Yeah.
Or we will come from that. Okay. The petition has worded so that it qualifies if annexed to the city of Nevada, Iowa. But the code itself does not reference anything having to do with annexation. Do we have a possible legal problem with the difference in the petition wording?
Well, that's a great question, and the board's consideration will have nothing to do with annexation. So once you set, so the first thing procedurally will be for this board to decide whether or not you're going to allow a public hearing on this petition or not, which you can or cannot do, depending on how you vote, and then you need to set a time either way for consideration of the petition, and then you'll decide on its face if the petition meets that requirement, and I can issue a legal opinion and ask the wording in the petition. If you have any questions about that, we can discuss that.
Would the wording in the petition, thanks, Marcia, would the wording in the petition impact at all the way we proceed on the petition?
So you, depending on how you structure this, if you pull the hearing, you can take in evidence beyond the petition itself. If you don't pull the hearing, then the petition on its face is what you will consider. The annexation language, just for the specific question in and of itself, doesn't render the petition invalid.
Perfect. So let's start with acknowledgement, and then we're going to talk about, depending on where we go on acknowledgement, we're going to talk about the process.
You're looking for two motions and one for...
Right now, all I'm looking for is to acknowledge that we received this petition requesting that we move through consideration of 357A. Assuming that we go ahead and receive the petition, there's not some reason that we shouldn't receive it. Then we're going to talk about the process that we're going to use to get through the deliberations. Okay? Olson.
Yes.
Aye. Sanders, aye. So petition is received. Now let's talk about how we're going to get there. It seems to me, Board and Jessica, that our interest is simply in allowing a landowner to be able to make economic decisions with their piece of property, and if it is found that rural water is a legal impediment to that, then it'll be clear. But I don't know that we go straight to public hearing. Maybe we do. I think our initial step should be to the groups, hey, we're willing to go down this road as a board. We've accepted this petition. The law is pretty clear on how we proceed from here. But we don't have to go straight to a determination. We could give the parties involved, which in my mind the parties involved are the landowners, Central Iowa Rural Water, and the city of Nevada, another opportunity, knowing that the sword of Damocles, if you will, is hanging out over them, to come together and figure this out, because like Hal says, landowners don't really care where the water comes from, right? You just want to be able to develop this property in a way that the city of Nevada ultimately would approve. It's going to be our decision, if it gets to us ultimately, of whether, in fact, Central Iowa Rural Water is a impediment to these landowners being able to develop as they want to develop. And that's a hard process. Has it ever been tested, to your knowledge, Jessica, in the state of Iowa?
No, but there's a clear statutory framework for how we proceed.
I'd like to address a question that you had, Al, because the first thing that popped to my mind with reading everything is, why did the city of Ames use this for these industrial annexation? Okay, I talked to Steve Shanker, so that's where I'm headed here. So I did talk to Steve Shanker, and he was aware of the statute, or at least from maybe Rick, your initial question a month ago went to look, but also related, I see a couple of land developers here in the office, or here in the audience also, and he referenced that why they have not historically, in his opinion, petitioned to break from my media water also. And what Steve said is that there have been federal cases on this, and that just giving the supervisors giving the break does not guarantee that you can hook up with Nevada Water or whatever the nearest municipality would be, because then what comes into play are all is the status of Central Iowa Water as a federally indebted, and then all the federal rules and regulations and statutes come into play. So you so the city or Steve's opinion was you go down this road. Get it from us, if you get it from us, you may be no closer to being able to truly hook up and may actually extend your time period for an answer if it ends up in litigation over the contract.
So you're saying it would go to a federal case rather than a state case?
Correct.
Central Iowa, yeah, or the rural water entity would go to federal.
Right, because it would most likely be a lawsuit between Central Iowa Water and the city of Nevada. So just to let you know.
Yeah, so I'm surprised to hear that City Manager Shanker was aware of this, because I know that I was in multiple conversations as the city of Ames sought to bring in the industrial area between Ames and Nevada. That is the Central Iowa Rural Water Service. And in fact, City of Ames did come to a financial arrangement with Central Iowa Rural Water in order to acquire those acres. This will be a fascinating process. What we need to do today is lay out the parameters of how we're going to go about dealing with this. My initial thought is that we would refer this to our county attorney to bring back to us as soon as reasonably possible to give us advice on where we can go. I think a public hearing, before this board were to decide anything, I think conducting a public hearing would absolutely be required. But I don't know that I'm at the point where I want to set that public hearing today, because we don't know how much analysis our county attorney is going to have to do. And again, it's my hope that by receiving this and letting all parties know that we're willing to explore this, worst case scenario, Loris, is we go down this road and we don't solve the problem for anybody. This thing ends up in court for years and years and years. And so,
I may want to say something, but maybe this process, maybe it wasn't tested in the court. And maybe this process is exactly what got the two parties to agree to in number four here. So, but right now we're at an impasse if we don't do anything. Okay, so it may be a catalyst to try to get a negotiation done. That's what we're asking for.
Certainly.
That's it.
Thank you. So we've received a petition. Now we've got to decide what to do with it. Thoughts?
Hi, I'm the comfort of letting Jessica come back to this, and I believe it would be a week's time be enough.
Absolutely.
All right, then I would think that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Al. Would you be available next week too, Al?
You betcha.
All right, then we have our parties. I don't know if there's any Central Iowa Rural Water people here.
Let's make sure we reach out to Central Iowa Rural Water if they're not here.
That would be my one person at the table we have not heard from is them, and maybe there's some rationale they would offer to give some insight, and maybe they could tell us something that we're not seeing.
I'd also like, and if this would be all right, under Jessica's research, are there in fact standards? Or to update me about actually what is the hookup process that we've heard today. It's not just, you know, tying in like an 8-inch main into Nevada. So I'd like to know that also for consideration before we do the public hearing.
Yeah, and so what I'm hearing, Marty, is you're suggesting that we refer this to County Attorney Reynolds for her and her staff to go through and come back and report to the board next week. From that report, we would determine how to proceed to make an ultimate decision, which, Loris, in my mind, would probably include a work session prior to a public hearing where we would be brought up to speed as a group on the realities of rural water and how it interacts with municipalities. Because if we're going to serve as a quasi-judicial body in this matter, which it sounds like we are, we better be really educated. And so, Al, I'm not seeing next week as the end of this thing. I'm seeing next week as the beginning of the formal process, which in my mind will include several steps.
That's what I anticipate.
Okay. Jessica, anything that I just said cause you concern, or does it get sideways with the way we're supposed to proceed on this? Okay. So, Marty, what I've heard is you would like to refer this to County Attorney Jessica Reynolds to report back to this board a week from today, and then we will make further decisions at that point.
I second that.
I have comfort with that. All right.
Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Folsom.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Jessica, we'll look forward to hearing from you in a week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al. You're welcome to stay, but don't feel like you have to.
Thanks, Al.
Consideration of minutes from December 20th and December 27th.
I would move to approve.
Second.
Motion and second. Any additions, notations, or corrections? Key.
Aye.
Polson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything to note? Polson.
Aye.
Key.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda, and
any additions?
So important to note here, after Supervisor Olson's question last week on our consent agenda, we have instituted a new process, which I think more closely follows what the law tells us, which is we have until Monday morning at 9 a.m. to get road closures, utility permits, all the things that typically, if you said in the audience, you've heard the board add to our consent agenda on a Tuesday morning. We're not going to do that anymore unless there is a legally sufficient reason to add it, which means it's an emergency of some sort. So we set a new cutoff time for all of those things. So hopefully you're not going to hear me amending the consent agenda very much. Consent agenda today is as listed.
I would move to set the consent agenda as placed before us today.
All second.
Motion and second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson. Sanders, aye. That takes care of consent agenda. That takes us all the way down.
I'd just like to say, I'd like to thank you and Shelly for working on that. It sounds like it's a good plan so that there's it's clear when something gets added.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention, and hopefully we'll continue to work that way. That takes us to public hearing items. First of our public hearing items is second consideration of Ordinance 247, amending the Story County Code of Ordinances, Chapter 90, Land Development Regulations. Gary, we went through all this 2 weeks ago.
We did.
Give us the high points. Give us if we had any comments or any thoughts at all.
We have not had any input from the general public. We did publish in the three newspapers that the Board of Supervisors approved. Again, we have not received any comment from the general public. As you said, the first consideration was on December 20, and it was approved by the Board of Supervisors. This is a request to add to the conditional use permit process for human service uses. The applicant, YSS Youth and Shelter Services, requested the amendment. We currently don't have anything in place in the ordinance that addresses this. Staff looked at it, and we decided that it was a good opportunity for us to broaden the spectrum of human service uses, and that's what we are proposing with this amendment. And again, it would be human services facilities and programs. This is what it would look like in the Story County Land Development Regulations, human services, facilities, and programs, except uses meeting the definitions of family home, which are intellectual disabilities, foster elder care, and foster care up to a certain number of individuals. If it's more than that, then it would fall under this provision. It would be permitted in all districts with the granting of a conditional use permit, which starts with the Planning and Zoning Commission, ends up with the Board of Adjustment for final.
So as we sit here today, there's not even a mechanism to consider this potential YSS project. Correct. This does not do anything to the YSS proposed YSS project except give us a mechanism for it to move through the process.
That's correct.
Question for it.
No, I guess what I'd say, and good morning, happy New Year, Jerry. I would say we've had no issues brought before us in the UVD County. I don't see any problems.
Okay, let's open the public hearing and see if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 247 for Story County. Seeing no one moving the microphone, I'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board. A couple options, three options that I can see. One, we can deny on second request Ordinance 247. We can approve it and set a date for third and final consideration, or we can approve it and waive third and final reading and make this the final action on Ordinance 247.
I have comfort, Morris. I don't know where you're at, but I think that Jerry's looking to this. Andrew Allen has a very good plan going forward. He's been given a request that I truly support, and I would make a motion to approve the second consideration of Ordinance 247, amending our Table 91 for conditional use land development regulations by adding human services facility and programs, and waive our third and final consideration.
I second.
Further discussion?
Chief. Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 247 passes. That's final consideration. Next item is... Next item is first consideration of Ordinance 248, amending the Story County Code of Ordinances and adding a new chapter to our land development regulations. This is dealing with special events.
Special events. This was an item that was on the work program for the Planning and Development Department in 2015. It was carried forward in 2016. We're very happy to be at this stage in the review of this. Several versions of the ordinance were before the Planning and Zoning Commission. This is the version that they support. Currently, in the conditional use permit process, in the Story County Land Development Regulations. We do have limited activity that includes music events, sporting events, entertainment, religious activities. Those things require conditional use permit review, permitted in an A1 and Greenbelt Conservation District. Process is somewhat lengthy and cumbersome. It involves first a conceptual review application, which is an opportunity to sit down with the departments in the county. If the applicants wish to go forward, they have to submit a conditional use permit application. There's a $275 fee. They submit drawings, related documentation. We do route that information to the interagency review team, which again comprises the departments here in the county for review. We do public notices to adjacent property owners. Staff prepares a report. And then it goes to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a recommendation, which ultimately ends up before the Board of Adjustment for action. This process can take over a month to complete. So this ordinance, this would be a standalone ordinance separate from the Story County Land Development Regulations. It would be titled Property and Land Use, or under that title, brand new chapter 83. Again, the goal is really to streamline the process, get to the review of these applications and a response much sooner, much quicker. They would be allowed in all zoning districts of the county. It would apply to groups over 250 participants, volunteers, and spectators. There would be some exemptions like for funeral processions, ag activities. If it's an activity that would be exempt under state law, which is also addressed under the county land development regulations, it would also be exempt from the special permit process. The fee, $50. Once the application is meeting county requirements, and then also with this, we're going to be shepherding the review of this with other entities, other police departments. If there's like a bike race, a running race that goes through the community, we would be the department that would communicate with those entities to get feedback, to get information from them about the request. But once the application is shown to meet the requirements and conditions, it goes before the Board of Supervisors for final action. The conceptual review was on October 13th. Didn't have a lot of specific comments from the departments other than they appreciate the fact that this will be shepherded by the Planning and Development Department. They're happy that it primarily affects the larger groups. We notified police, fire, ambulance services, did not get any responses throughout the county. Board of Supervisors did set the hearing for Ordinance 248 December 13. We did put the publication in the three newspapers, which was published December 15. It was also reviewed by the Story County Attorney's Office. This is the special events ordinance. You should have a copy of that. Pretty simple, it's 5 pages. You have to go through any specific questions that you have. But again, the goal is really to streamline the process from what we have. Less costly. We're still going to do the communication. There's one point that I do want to bring up is in the ordinance, we do ask the applicants to communicate with the adjacent landowners. And in further consideration of this, we think that it's something that we should continue with the public notification process, which we can do it administratively, or we can add that to the actual ordinance if the board sees that that's necessary. With that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Absolutely. So you mentioned as you got going that this was before the Planning and Zoning Commission for over a year. It went through multiple iterations, lots and lots of discussion. Please share with this board some of the high points or the sticking points that the Planning and Zoning Commission seemed to catch on.
The biggest thing really is we had it worded such that there would be certain things. We were trying to regulate smaller groups. And trying to figure out who would be the responsible party to do the review. Whether some of those things would go to Planning and Zoning Commission, and then which ones would go to the Board of Supervisors. They saw this as being something that should be more administratively done, and then ultimately approved by the Board of Supervisors.
So more so, we're moving more toward the way we currently handle firewall permits. Right, so that is, in my mind, a special event that kind of has its own category. Whether it's codified or it's just in practice, it does not seem to flow through our current process. But now we're trying to carve out anything for 250 people or more. There's a more streamlined process to get through rather than several months and several hundred dollars. Questions for Jared before we open public hearing?
I get a little queasy when you sit there and you've got a fee of $50 for somebody's funeral. Or an ag event.
Those are exempt.
Okay, those are the exemptions. Thank you. I guess I'm stand corrected.
I have some questions or prepared concerns. There's a lot of discretion. As you go through this policy, it doesn't say you will have 3 people monitoring traffic, or you will put out this particular barricade, or you will have a sign indicating a parking area. So I look at all of these, and I see each one of these as a negotiation, possibly a multi-department negotiation with the person who wants to throw the event. And I see that a quagmire. So if I were applying for one of these, I would want to know what the rules that are up front. At least some basic rules. There are no minimums in here. And so everything is going to be negotiable. So I see this, while you're talking about a quagmire of a conditional permit, use permit of several months, or at least 30 days or however, boy, I see this being potentially a big problem, eating up a lot of time for a lot of different staff members. The second, so related to that, then you give yourself 3 days to turn around. Or more if you, Jerry, or director, decide it is warranted. So I, from a client or a resident standpoint, I don't even know at the end of 3 days if what's going to happen. And it could be, depending on what the issue that somebody gets hung up on, it could go and go and go. And I don't think that's good customer service. Okay? The next concern that I have has to do with you have one of the decisions or for the recommendation to bring to the board is depending on how many of the times they apply for one of these. So
So automatically, once again, it's a negotiation. Wins too many times. I'm thinking, you know,
some of our ag value added, and I would say ag isn't affected, but I suspect something like wineries and orchards that are having large events do fall under this, correct?
That could be.
Yeah.
Could be
so their businesses, of which part of their business model is to have large events, and they don't always know, when is too many events? So I just, it really makes me nervous.
Well, I think great questions. A couple things that I would say is, one, they still, any entity, so a winery, for example, if they know they're going to do a lot of these kinds of special events, they can go ahead through our existing process and get the conditional use permit through the Board of Adjustments that doesn't rest with the Board of Supervisors, and then they would not have to adhere to this because their conditional use would already grant them the ability to do that, so they wouldn't have to come through this if they were going to do multiple events. The second thing I would say is, currently, we have one of two things happening for all special events in Story County. Either they're going through this quagmire process that ultimately goes to the Board of Adjustment, not the Board of Supervisors, or we're just never getting reported, and we find out after the fact that this event just occurred and traffic was tied up on 530th Street because nobody was aware of it. Or there was a bike race coming through Story County that we didn't have any awareness of what routes they were using because nobody told us. And so we're trying, as I see it, to get to a point where we're aware and we can weigh in. And ultimately, those decisions, those gray areas that you talk about, would ultimately reside with the Board of Supervisors via staff. But they reside with the Board of Supervisors, which is, I think, exactly where they're supposed to. The gray area is supposed to reside in Story County. And so I think you made great points. I think the intent of this, and Jerry, I'd ask you to speak to this, the intent of this is to clean up some of those things that you're most concerned about right now. Right now it's flowing through the conditional use process, if it's being used at all. And that decision resides with the Board of Adjustment. You want to address any of that before we go to public hearing?
Like with wineries, those things would require a conditional use permit. And a lot of times through the review and the application process, it comes out that they want to do additional activities in addition to growing and processing grapes. And so a lot of times that's dealt with in the CUP process.
Right.
And so that's how some of those things are identified that way.
Could I direct on the ordinance itself? We go to the chart that shows uses, additional use permit required, and then supplemental standards apply. So we're talking about attachment B, all right? And I see crossed out temporary facilities for music, sports events, entertainment, religious meetings, and single uses. Is that what you're talking about now?
That, right, so that's the process.
If it's a conditional use permit,
for
that is fine. This is for someone who has not gone through the process of conditional use permit. So a winery would pay to get
a
conditional use permit and not have to get a separate permit.
A lot of times they're dealt with the CUP process. That's part of the flushing out process, if I can use that word, when they make the submittal to figure out all the things that they want to do with that conditional use permit. And so it's dealt with.
Yeah, this is for the entity that has never gotten a conditional use permit and is really trying to do a one-off or a two-off in having an event. And, Laura, that's one of the reasons that you asked earlier, how many is too many, right? Well, I think at some point you say, oh, we're seeing a lot of these from you. You need to go through the full conditional use permit. We need to grant one, have the county consider it once and for all. And, again, that'd be Board of Adjustment, not Board of Supervisors. Can we get to the end of it?
And then part of this, too, is that some of these events could be multiple days, several days, and so the view would be that it would be one permit that would cover those days, but it would be federally established.
Well, it allows us to inform all the entities, law enforcement, secondary roads, all the entities that might be impacted by something like this happening. And like I say, in the past, what we've seen is we found out as an event was going on, we're trying to make it a little easier and hopefully not a quagmire for somebody to come and follow the correct process.
That's usually the last thing that happens in the event planning process. A lot of times,
yeah,
we find that they contact the local governing body applying the special requirement. And sometimes it's too late to go through a process like what we have now.
Outstanding. All right, let's open public hearing, see if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 248. Yeah, Barbara, come on up.
Margaret James, Environmental Health. My one question is if Greg Wright is coming through town and they didn't get the permit, do we stop them? Do we, you know, what happens if they do not get the paperwork?
Well, we part of this is to educate, and so we try to get information out before groups like that. If we know that that's going to be a possibility that they're going to come through, so that we can avoid that situation from occurring. But that's part of the problem with special events. You either have to make a decision that it's going to get shut down, or the next go-round, you want to make sure that they follow.
Well, there's another possibility. Once you have an ordinance like this, you can also add to the ordinance, I believe, instituting some kind of civil penalty for those who don't follow it. And if the civil penalty is something similar to or a little more than the application fee to get through the process, I think that would encourage people to get through the process. But I'm with you. I like the idea of trying to put something in place that educates and encourages people to come. Margaret, the answer to the question, I don't believe that anybody on the Board of Supervisors is going to be willing to put up a roadblock for RAGBRAI if it happens.
That was an extreme example.
So give us the list of all the activities.
Let's get to the end of the public hearing, and then we'll go back to questions. Anybody else wishing to address this? Oh, we got a former member, former as of 2 days, member of Planning and Zoning, who gets to talk to us about this one. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Yeah, I did. I almost suggested that you just come on up. I tried to ask a question about all the fun conversations that Planning and Zoning had. Tell us something about it.
Okay. This came up, was put on the
chat. Nancy, introduce yourself.
Oh, Nancy Miller, 2358-4 600th Avenue, Nevada. My term in Planning and Zoning, my last meeting was December. Okay. And so I was involved in all these discussions. First of all, it was put on the work schedule for 2015. Why? Don't know. Okay? Now, the way those things get on that work session is somebody just kind of mentions it. There's no real determination, hey, this is really a problem we ought to really take a look at. So nothing was done with it in 2015. Carried over to 2016. Why? There had been no special event come up, and I found it interesting that you said that you find out things when they are happening. During every one of our P&Z meetings, nobody could come up with something that this would apply to. All right? That line item on the matrix, I asked Jerry, I said, could you investigate, research, when was that added? Why was that added? He could not come up with either one of those answers. So, you know, it's just kind of, well, it's always been there. Which, you know, doesn't sit well with me. Always been there. Okay? So then we started the arduous process of writing and rewriting and rewriting. This has been in the works since the September of 2016 P&Z meeting. Okay? At that time and continuing, I've objected to it. Why? Number one, I don't think that we need to try to control every aspect of everyone's life. Okay? I think that there will be way too many exceptions. They're not even listed here. They're going to come up. That it's just not going to fly. It's not going to work. As an example, based upon this ordinance, what's to stop people from having a special event that lasts 3 hours and 45 minutes and has 240 people attending, then they don't have to get it. And so therefore, because the list of things that have to be done, you know, signatures from the joining property owners, approval from the environmental health, permits from the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals, state electrical permits, certificate of insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they can get around all that by just going 3 hours and 45 minutes and 245 people. Okay? So I think that, I really don't think that this is needed. Period.
Yeah. So, Nancy, I really appreciate your point of view. You know I've loved your point of view for the last 4 years that you were on planning and zoning. My question would be, as we sit here today, if that event that was going to go 3 hours and 45 minutes and have 240 people, if they were going to follow our current process appropriately, what would they have to do? I'm not saying what they're really doing. I'm saying our current process, what would they have to do?
Nothing.
No, they'd have to, as I understand it, they'd have to file for a conditional use permit and then run through the whole process.
But see, my point is, why is that line on the matrix to begin with? We had no answer for that.
We did have an answer, excuse me. I provided an answer at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and it was like mid-80s, 1986 was when that was happening.
1980s.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that this is the right way to go. I'm saying that as we sit here today, what we're asking of that group for 240 for 3 hours and 45 minutes is completely excessive. This would exempt that group that you're talking about. Now, if they go above 250 and above 4 hours, does that make a difference? Sure it does, but somewhere out there, there's got to be a line that says, if there's some kind of large special event going on, I know we dealt with this yesterday on a bicycle race, and we dealt with this on some kind of big party along 530th Avenue south of Ames 4 or 5 years ago, where we found out about it when calls started coming into the sheriff's office that there was a problem. And so at some point, Nancy, I sit here and I say, well, there's a small party that I'm having in my backyard. Yeah, we shouldn't worry about that. But if I'm going above a certain amount, and 250 sounds like a good amount to me, if we're going above a certain amount, we need to at least have some kind of notification. But I shouldn't have to go through 6 weeks of government in order to have a party in my backyard. And so I'm trying to get to the end, and I'm with you. So one of two things in my mind needs to happen. Either we need to go ahead with this ordinance and clarify how these smaller, shorter, less frequent events are regulated and we're notified. Or we need to strike the one line and just say, okay, come one, come all, if you're having a special event, good luck to you, and we'll count on calls to dispatch to get out there when we have a problem.
When it's an event that is less than a half a day, okay, confusion, how people are going to complain for a half a day event? I don't see it. Okay? The last time that something came up was how long ago? 4 years? 5 years? Now, the reality is that falls into the category of a rare event. Okay? You do not plan for rare events occurring. If you start seeing it happening twice, then a policy is needed. An ordinance is needed. But for a potential rare event that may or may not happen in the next 5 or 10 years, I don't see it. My suggestion was not to have this ordinance and to strike that line item off the matrix.
Sure. And the problem with that, Nancy, is then we have no way of knowing when one of these events is occurring. And the nightmare scenario for me, as I'm looking at it, that event that occurred somewhere south on 530th, 4 or 5 years ago, we don't know anything about it. There's an emergency call, and first responders are trying to respond, and the most direct route is down 530th through this event, and they get caught up in this free-for-all because there's an event going on right there, whereas if we had had notification, they could have just rerouted themselves. If it's on a gravel road, we need to be aware so we can get out there and take care of the road so that we don't have a quagmire. We need to make sure that the sheriff is informed if something like this is going on. And so just the fact that it's a rare occurrence means to me that we don't need to have what we have today is an excessive process that if you were going to do it appropriately and have one of those events, you would have to go through. Now, I don't think that's reasonable. I think what is reasonable is if this board wants to say, no, we don't want to know about it. You guys, good luck to you, and we'll respond when we have to respond. Okay, we can do that. Or we can try to hit the happy medium and say, well, okay, what's small enough that it's not going to impact us a whole lot? Where's that large point that we need to know something about it? But let's not make it excessive regulation for you to go through in order to get that done. Now, I'm hearing you say that you think this is excessive regulation to get something like that done, and I think that's a great conversation for us to have. I'm just struggling with the whole all or nothing. Right now, it's all.
Yeah.
Even though people
because
aren't
that
lying,
line
it's all.
Because that line item is there on the matrix.
Yep.
Okay.
And if you do away with it, then you have no mechanism at all to know when something like this is happening. Questions for Nancy?
I would tell you, Nancy, I haven't been out here that long, but when you start talking about exceptions, part of what I've done in the time here is I'm in the midst of dealing with Keith Morgan down in emergency management, and Dr. Jamie White, our Surrey County Medical Examiner, are putting together a refreshed emergency or a mass casualty plan. Our fervent wish between all parties is the wish to make something that is concurrent to this date and put it on the shelf when we get very dusty. But on an accounting basis as on a planning basis, we actually do look at these things knowing that if the potentiality exists, we would like to have something that we can turn to use. And I don't see, if you're looking at an event that's going to be subject to a conditional use permit versus what is proposed today, I would certainly think that this offers up a much better choice. And that's just it. And I would like to think that the county has the ability to have these kind of events, but I also think the county should give itself the tools to have these events too.
Good.
Well,
question for Nancy? Nancy, thank you very much.
Just one more thing.
Yep.
Here's an example. Okay, and also in here it talks about money exchanging hands. All right. I would like to know what the penalty is. If let's say that there's a funeral, which you don't plan for funerals, even a week ahead. No, you funeral processions, as a result of the funeral. So let's say that this is a huge funeral, and we say, well, just come on out to our place out in the unincorporated areas. And it happens to be more than 250 people. And it lasts for 6 hours. Is that family going to be penalized for going ahead and holding that event?
No, there's no penalty provision in this. This is counting on citizens doing the right thing and following what's put out in front of them. Now,
I think there is a penalty part of this.
What is the penalty part of this?
It's just at an undetermined amount.
But it's on the last paragraph. Should you read it?
Yeah, read it.
It says, a violation of this title shall be a county infraction and may involve the issuance of a citation. The county sheriff's office, in its discretion, may stop a special event which has been issued. A permit and or may issue citations where event staff or participants violate other state statutes or county ordinances, terms or conditions specified in the application, which include but are not limited to traffic rules, regulations, disturbing the peace, public nuisance, failure to disperse, trespass, or other health.
Right, but I read that not as that's not a citation based on this ordinance. That's a citation based on other state or county ordinances, which we can already do.
Which is where my question for legal was.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not see a penalty component of this, short of the sheriff would have the ability to go out and shut the thing down. Now, you count on our sheriff. I mean, I told you guys earlier, of the 42 years of experience among elected officials, 22 years coming from the sheriff. I count on him and his staff to have enough sense that if it's that funeral, let's all gather at my house thing, that he's not going to go out there and say, okay, you guys all of us disperse.
And so in other words, what you're saying is that there's no penalty if you did not get the special event permit.
Right, and that's what I said earlier. I believe there should be a penalty that's comparable or just slightly more than what the application would have been for doing it right. But there's not that in here right now.
Did you think that that funeral, who planned that funeral to come on out, should be pay a penalty?
Yeah, I think you're getting to a really specific instance right now. You're asking me personally what I think of that? No, if you are at church one day and you invite people over to your house, I don't consider that a special event. But that's me.
But that goes into the vagueness.
Absolutely. I'm not questioning vagueness. I think Laura's made a really, really good point in questions on this. All I'm saying is, where are we today, and how does this compare to what we are today if you're following the right process? And I think we're worse off today than we would be if we try to start correcting this thing. Do I think we would pass this and then just be done with it forever? No, I think there's going to be tweaks that have to happen. I just think we're better off with this than what citizens are supposed to do today before they have one with 100 people that lasts for 2 hours. So.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Nancy. Anybody else? And then we'll get, Laura, to your question for legal. Anybody else that would like to address this as part of the public hearing? Then I'll close the public hearing. Jess, I ask you to come up. Walsh, go ahead.
Staying with the A3.11 violation, dot 70, the fact that we are not specifying a penalty.
Yeah.
All right. So do we have the ability to go ahead and make modifications to this right now and instead collect a penalty or a fine? And then the sheriff would be most likely to write up the citation, correctly?
Correct. Yes, you absolutely do have that authority to make those changes, and the entity that would enforce that would be the sheriff's office.
Sure. Other questions, comments, thoughts, or potential action?
Coming back to the time frame, this is A308 approval and issuance, section 2. This shall be made within 3 business days, because in the next sentence, the director reserves the right to extend this time frame. I would prefer instead that we say, like, shall be 5 business days, which is a week, and not say the director reserves the right. I'm back to, if we can't work this out in a week, then it's probably a no. The Board of Supervisors will tell the people, fix what's wrong and come on back, instead of have it kind of sit in a departmental administrative limbo.
I think part of the idea is that if there are issues that maybe the applicants don't agree to, the conditions, that those would be considered ones that would be a denial that would be brought to the Board of Supervisors, and we would give a presentation on that. The applicants would also participate in that process.
So could we take out the entire sentence, the director reserves the right to extend this?
Just dragging it all together?
Yes, drag it all together. Because it says, hey, we're going to do this within 3 days.
Right.
But then we're going to turn around and we're going to extend at discretion if we have something else to work out. And that's why I said, hey, let's make it 5 days, and then it would come to the Board of Supervisors the denial.
Yeah, and I can tell you that 3 days, that's typically on rezoning requests, conditional uses, we typically give other departments between 2 and 3 days to provide us with comments. So that's kind of a standard administrative practice. We certainly can extend that, but again, it kind of gets to the point of trying to expedite these applications. You know, if we want to do a week, we certainly can do that.
Okay. One thing I'd like to look at is we work through this,
and that's why that we've got that discretion in there. If we've got some things we're trying to work out, it's going to probably take longer than the 3 days, and then we would have that discretion.
Can we, instead of the director reserves the right, can we say by mutual agreement, this time frame can be extended?
That reaches
between the applicant and the county.
Right. Sure. So then the applicant's involved in making that decision. But
he or she wants.
So there's more than you got right. Wrong. There's some questions that need to be answered. Right. So if you'd be okay. Other questions for Jared?
No, I'm just waiting to see what the motion looks like.
Okay, yeah.
All right. As we figure it out here, I'm just looking to see, since it's your motion, I look forward to
you. When is your planning and zoning commission meet next? That we have time to get, yeah, that we have time to get something on their agenda.
It'd be the first Wednesday of each month.
Yeah, and so we're just so you know where I'm going on this. If we make what we deem to be substantive changes to this, I'm going to ask that we send it back to planning and zoning for them to review it and make a recommendation on whatever changes we made before we take final action.
So
and if we don't make substantive changes, then I'm good because we got their recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next question is, did you look at ordinances in other communities or other counties of our size? And do they were they also so vague or do they give some baseline?
We did look at a number of ordinances. Some of them actually go through the process like what we have today, with like a CUP application process. Some are just administratively reviewed. So, and like I said, we gave multiple versions, provided multiple versions to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we ended up with the version that you see for you. So, and again, the idea is we're trying to move things along a lot quicker sooner than the process that we have today.
Yeah, and so to be fair, on this, this idea was bloated at some point in the conversations over the last year or so that this really become an administrative process, and there was pushback from several places, but particularly one member of the Board of Supervisors, and he happens to be sitting in the middle right here right now. The idea that this would just be administrative and the Board of Supervisors wouldn't have a ultimate role.
Right, I remember that.
Well, it's good for the Board to see this because a lot of times you're seeing the liquor licenses and, you know, for some of these events they're requesting that permit, and so this way you're seeing the bigger picture.
Well, if it's a cut and dry kind of thing, I view this as many of these just rolling onto our consent agenda, which gives due notice and we are able to make sure that everybody is being what's happening. Yeah. So, other thoughts, other questions for Jerry? All right. Action, if any.
Well, if we are going to make substantive changes, are we going to bring it back with the changes as the first reading? Or how are we going to do that?
I think if we're making substantive changes, that we would recommend substantive changes and refer it back to planning and zoning. It would be my preference if we're making substantive changes.
So that would be the motion you're looking for.
Whatever you guys want to move.
I will move acceptance with a change in the violation penalty to add a dollar amount. And of a dollar amount of a violation of three times the amount of the permit.
Okay, so do I have a second on that First Amendment?
Do you want to go through the full thing?
I think I want to do each amendment individually. So let's start with that because I think you're going to have at least one more that you're going to come forward with, right? So let's start with that. Marty, will you second? Making, so this is under 83.11 penalty, and the violation would include a fine of up to three times.
Of up to?
Three times the current cost of the application.
With a civil citation, isn't there also an amount associated with that as well? And so would that be in addition to that?
Or what's your preference there? Are you trying to get to three times? So would it be the civil penalty would be you must pay the application fee plus two more times or the application fee plus three more times?
Oh, I see what you're asking. Pay the application fee plus two more times. I'm not looking for anyone who is fined to pay more than $150 at this point. So.
Perfect. So first motion dies for lack of a second. Make the second motion just like that.
I move that we do the amendments of 83.11 violation penalty section to say that the offending party must receive a citation that requires payment of the permit fee plus up to 2 times the permit fee.
$450. Well, you're tying it all to what the permit fee is. So if the permit fee changes, then that's okay.
I come from that. I'm assessing that.
All right. Discussion on that one amendment. Olson.
Aye.
Katie.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. That motion then. What's your next one?
Okay. 8308, approval and issuance. Section 2, okay, a second sentence. And Rick, you actually had the wording. By mutual agreement, the timeline can be extended. And then we'll continue, Shelley, from that point on with what's in there, if extra time is needed, etc. Pardon?
We'll get to that in just a minute. This is just the amendment. This is 830.08, paragraph 2. By mutual agreement, this time frame may be extended as needed.
As needed.
I would second that.
All right. The motion second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Kitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. That's amended. Any more amendments before we decide how we're going to deal with it? All right. So, couple options. We can just straight refer this back to planning and zoning to consider our changes. We can adopt this on first consideration with our changes and send it back to planning and zoning for them to make a recommendation to us before we have second reading. So, it would mean we would set our second reading for the second week of February.
Carrie, do you see any pushback from you or yourself or anybody else by our adoption of these amendments to what you brought us today?
We refer to the Planning and Zoning Commission or just anybody in general?
Anybody.
I wouldn't think that there would be any major concerns.
Okay.
So what's your pleasure?
Well, I guess I would probably feel comfortable, and thanks for the deep dive, Boris, that I believe this is well thought out and well reasoned, and I would have comfort in making this approved first consideration of this as we propose it today and bring it back for our second reading on the 10th.
We're in February now. Do you want to send it to planning and zoning, or do you not want to send it to planning and zoning?
If Jerry says there's no real issues.
I wouldn't think that the Planning and Zoning Commission would have any major concerns with what's being proposed.
We have that luxury, but I guess I would take it at him and, for what he said, that if he doesn't believe that there's any consideration or any issues that planning and zoning would have, that I think that we have comfort in that we can bring it back to us for a second, unless there somebody else would like to say something otherwise, or you would like to see this vetted through planning and zoning. Okay.
This is just me. I personally see that when we make changes to something, substantive changes, which I believe these are, I think adding a civil penalty is a substantive change. I'm not sure it's not time frame, I would say it's a substantive change, but I think adding the civil penalty is, I would like to get weigh-in from Planning and Zoning Commission before we do our third and final. That doesn't mean we can't do second next week, but I'm going to be reticent to have third and final reading and final approval prior to Planning and Zoning having an opportunity to at least give us their thoughts.
So you would like a motion, or you would entertain a motion that would refer this also to planning and zoning, but accept this as a first consideration?
Yeah, so first consideration, and then you set the second consideration whenever you guys want it. What I'm telling you is if you set second consideration for next Tuesday, you can expect me to come and ask that we have a third and final consideration, and that it occur after planning and zoning has an opportunity to weigh in on it. If we do this first consideration today, it allows Jerry to go forward and notify the Planning and Zoning Commission that this has happened, but they won't be able to take any action in this next meeting because there's not time to get it on the agenda.
All right, well, that would be my motion then, that we adopt this as the first consideration, 248, and then we refer this to P&Z. We can bring this back for second meeting next week,
okay,
the 10th, and then we would wait for their weigh-in.
Well, we can handle that next week. So I'm hearing your motion as to adopt 248 on first reading as amended, and set second reading for January 10th.
Yes.
Second.
All right, motion second. Further discussion. Keith.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes on first consideration as amended. Next item is first consideration of Ordinance 249, amending the Story County Code of Ordinances, Chapter 85. It's you, Leanne. Along with you, you're part of this, aren't you?
I am.
Morning.
All right, so I'm hopeful, Leanne, that as I read through this, it was fairly straightforward. And this is acknowledging our C2C, and these next few are acknowledging our C2C and its role in our ordinances and making the replacements necessary, and recognizing that solar is headed this way, and we're ahead of the game if we start to recognize that in our code of ordinances. Did I boil it down to a nutshell?
Yeah, I'm done.
Tell us what else you need to tell us, and then we'll get to questions, and then we'll open the poll.
If it's okay with the three of you, I would like to, in this one presentation, cover ordinances 249, 50, 51, and 252.
Yeah, we'll do a public hearing separately for each of those, but you go ahead and do your presentation. Okay.
Just a quick presentation overview. I'm going to go over the specific tasks that got us to this meeting. As you just mentioned, they do relate from the C2C implementation matrix. I have some solar farm regulations that at least two of you have seen, or solar farm slides. I will breeze through those and then you can ask questions as we go. Then I'll go specifically through the four chapters and then talk about the next steps and the alternatives. So the C2C implementation matrix approved by the board last fall did include two specific items that bring us here today. One, developing and adopting the C2C plan amendment process. Lead for both of these items is the board of supervisors, and these are both immediate time frames, so that's why they're pretty time sensitive. Second item is considering development of solar farm regulations. I won't read that, but earlier this fall, I think, I did present to the Board of Supervisors some information on solar energy. Utility-scale solar farms, not the small individual units that are already permitted as accessory units to single-family dwellings or farmsteads, whatever that may be. That's already permitted in our ordinance for those types of uses. These are those commercialized solar farms. Two types of solar energy and technologies. I bring this to your attention just for one specific reason. We are only allowing photovoltaic EV types of solar energy. We specifically prohibit the concentrated solar power, the CSPs. Quite honestly, we don't have the solar radiation necessary to achieve that type of solar energy technology, nor do we. The concern is maintaining our continuation of agricultural land. These are larger size tracts. These are the mirrors, the parabolic mirrors, the hundreds and hundreds of acres to create these types of solar technologies. And again, we don't have the radiation that's necessary for these anyway. It is what is occurring in Southwest United States. You've seen this, just solar energy in Iowa is definitely on the upwards trend. This is kind of dated from last fall, but you see a number of solar manufacturers, installers, and others that are emerging in Iowa, and specifically in central Iowa. This is the PV solar resources of the United States, and I just bring this to your attention to see a lot of people think in Iowa solar energy is not necessarily a possibility, and we definitely do have the resource on a daily basis, even in the winter months, to maintain this type of resource. And this slide just shows that technology has become enhanced to the degree now we are able to move the units to maximize the radiation that's occurring in all times of the year, not just summertime. This slide, I'm harkening back to what happened with the wind turbine and the wind energy in Iowa. When it first came out, it was very costly. That went down and the capacity went up. And so you definitely see that as a trend that is occurring for solar as well. Costs are going up, or costs are going down, capacities are going up. We went back to the American Planning Association, which is a professional affiliation of planners like Jerry and myself, and they have a solar briefing paper that's called Integrating Solar Energy into Local Development Regulations. Took a lot of guidance from that. That did recommend development standards addressing height, rights-of-way, screening, fencing, whatever that may be, but beyond that, we went back to our CWECs, our Commercial Wind Energy Conversion System standards. Those have worked incredibly well. In fact, they are the model ordinance for jurisdictions throughout the United States. And I'm very proud of that, and I think that's a strong heritage that we can bring forward. There are some commonalities that we did note through this process. It is a conditional use permit for CWECs. It should be for solar farms. Supplemental standards should be in on the books so that it's just not the six standards for approval for conditional use permits. I'm looking at Jerry because it's been a while since I've looked at those. Decommissioning should be addressed as well as the middle requirements. So we do have standards that address definitions, height. You can read all that, but the proposed ordinance will amend the conditional use permit chapter to add the supplemental standards, but also amend the table of base districts in which these are allowed. Any questions on the solar changes? And I'll get to specific ordinance here shortly.
Yep. Questions on solar changes?
Share this with us as well.
C2C amendments, obviously once the C2C plan was adopted, all the references to the County Development Plan, or CDP, needed to be stricken and removed from the existing regulatory documents we had. So with that, that's the nature of the amendments, and also building into a process directly into the Code of Ordinances for actually amending the C2C plan, which we don't currently have. Did look at the zoning compatibility matrix, too, to help define the process for rezonings and text amendments. Right now, as on the books, it's not really straightforward. What we did was try to clarify the approaches that should be taken for rezonings and text amendments in light of the C2C plan adoption. So with that, any questions on C2C amendments?
Question for Leanne on either the C2C or solar farm.
So I'm going to go right to Chapter 85. This is the General Provisions and Definitions chapter of the Land Development Regulations chapter of the Code of Ordinances. The majority of changes are adding definitions to actually adopt the solar regulations. I should note, too, let me back up. These are broken into four different ordinances tied to a specific chapter of the Code of Ordinances. One, so that's a clear process for the public to follow, and two, to enable staff as we make changes to actually Code of Ordinances to have an easier task. But the changes in this do relate to solar farm definitions, but also amending definitions to C2C, and then renumbering as...
Yeah, so we could have done all this with one ordinance. It just would have been more cumbersome, more confusing, and harder down the road to come back and adjust.
So, I am on now ordinance number 249. And are there any questions?
None. I'll open the public hearing, ask if there's no one who'd like to address 249. See no one moving right forward. We'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
I move adoption of this ordinance.
I thank you for your research during this past fall. And I see this as clarity going forward. I understand that it was comforting to see that I was just driving up East Lincoln Way here last week and you saw solar panels going into business. So I think the industry's here. We are now giving ourselves some ability to give some direction, and I would second.
Yeah, but before you second, would you add a second reading to your motion?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and set a second reading for next week, for January 10th.
The 10th. Now second.
I second that.
All right, further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 249 is passed. Second reading next week. 250.
And I failed to mention that all four of these changes were to be before the Board of Supervisors later slide, before the Planning and Zoning Commission at the same December 7th meeting, and they were all recommended for approval by the Board. Again, that's, or by the Commission, that's later on. The next one deals with Chapter 86, the District Regulations. This is quite simply only addressing PGC plan adoption, striking all the references to the CDP plan.
Yeah, the County Development Plan is what we referred to before, now with the adoption of the C2C as it's in the first master plan. Anything to know before we open the public hearing? Any questions before we open the public hearing? Public hearing is now open. Anybody who'd like to address Ordinance 250? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the Board for action.
I move adoption of Ordinance 250 and set a second hearing for January 10th.
I second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? Sheedy.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 250 passes second reading next week. 251.
Ordinance number 251 deals with Chapter 90, conditional uses. There's two slides on this one. It does strike references to county development plan replaced with the C2C plan. The majority of changes are specifically in regards to the solar farm, adding a new section and supplemental standards, Section 8, commercial solar energy systems, and adding standards for height, setbacks, flare, everything from that to compliance with applicable codes, a pre-substantive listing of standards, again, patterning after the commercial RECs, wind energy conversion systems, in addition to adding a list of submittal requirements.
Super. Any questions before I open the public hearing? Public hearing on 251 is now open. Anybody wishing to address that? Seeing no one move the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the Board for action.
I move that we adopt with a second reading for January 10th.
I second that.
Motion to second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 251 is adopted with second reading next week. 252.
This is the administrative chapter. This deals with the processes in place for amending the C2C plan, but also amending, doing rezonings and text amendments. I do want to go through these bullets real quick. We want to amend the table of contents, add the new section 9208, and remember accordingly that 9208 is a C2C plan amendment. Revise references to the county development plan. Section 92.06 rezonings, clarifying the procedural steps. Previously, these have been adopted by resolution, pulling all that resolution, putting them in and codifying in the ordinance. And building in the similar requirements and then renumbering. Same approach with text amendments in section 92.07. 9208 is the new process for C2C plan amendments and then renumbering everything else accordingly. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions for
Sandy? I think it's just a wording comment here. 9207. Section 9207, you're down, you go to item G under 1, the new one, and your last sentence reads, in case the commission does not recommend approval of the change, such amendments shall not become effective except by the favorable vote of at least 2/3 of all members of the Board of Supervisors. The implication is if they vote to approve it, it's automatic. You have, see where the implication is?
Yes.
So I suggest that we reword that to just, if you go down and I found that the wording I think is appropriate later down, if you go down to the very last page of what's in front of you, and it would be 9208, and go to G, and then it says, following a recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission, the request is forwarded to the Board of Supervisors, and then they officially. So what you've just got is an implication.
I agree wholeheartedly. The only thing, this is direct language from the code violation in regarding.
Oh, then I guess they didn't have my edit.
Because we had a very similar discussion, and that is verbatim from the Code of Iowa requirement for the board to take action on these types of requests. I don't know if you want to supplement it with upon recommendation or know that that's...
If that's how the code reads,
I'm good. Well, with the government. But open the public hearing for 252 and ask if there's anyone who would like to address it. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
I'll move to accept this second reading on January 10th.
Of course, I would say as a caveat, being on the school board for a long time, you probably do not state code in Iowa High School Association school boards that they do the horsepower and the background alert, and you just get the credit for taking their work product. So, not unusual. One of those questions you ask, now, where did you get this? Second it.
Got a motion to second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chief. Aye. Sanders. Aye. 252 passes second reading. Next week, that's it for public hearing items. We're to additional items now. We move additional item number 5 up to additional item number 1, and that is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1768, the final major subdivision plat for Cameron Estates. Gary.
Cameron Estates, located northwest of the city of Ames, about a mile to the northwest. The preliminary plat was before the Planning Zone Commission Board of Supervisors in 2014. This is located in Franklin Township. It's also located in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, designated Rural Service Ag Conservation Area, subcategory is Rural Residential. Under the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, these areas with this designation are outside of the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert's purview for review. So fall solely under the county's purview for review. This is from the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Again, it states subject properties designated rural service and ag conservation. Sub area again is rural residential. Under 521 of the plan, it indicates cities waive their right to extraterritorial subdivision and application of their related design and improvement standards. So, property owners Friedrich Cameron Farms Estates, Cameron Farms LLC, zoning is AR, Agricultural Residential. It's located in Section 19 of Franklin Township. What's proposed is 16 lots. Again, it's on the north portion of the subdivision. Subdivision border is bordered by 190th Street to the north, 505th Avenue to the west. It's also west of the Hickory Hills subdivision, which is located to the east. The development includes the extension of Harvest Road, which is the main road going in, and a new cul-de-sac road called Cobblestone Court. Lot sizes range from a little over an acre to 1.3 acres. The property location is somewhat in transition. There are some agricultural parcels to the west, 18, 19-acre parcels. To the east is about a 10-acre agricultural parcel with some woods and drainage. The applicant does have interest in this area for a future extension of the development. To the north, we've got a 1.5 acre parcel, which is the Outlot F. There's also almost a 4-acre parcel with a single family dwelling, contains some accessory structures. There's also a larger parcel containing a residence that has some row crops and woods. So this takes us to the preliminary plat concept drawing that was submitted in 2014. Again, for the most part, the first phase has been completed, the road grading, utilities installed. So really the focus is on the northern portion, which is right here. It's outlined in red for you. It's 16 lots. The only difference really is with lots 35 and 36. You can see that the two lots came to a point, and whereas with this proposal, there's actually more space now for septic systems, which was tremendously supported by the Environmental Health Department. Again, dates February 11, 2014. Was the preliminary plat in July 1 of 2014, the final plat. The most recent letter of credit and development improvement agreement went through 2018. With this plat, that goes away. There were items such as completing the top layer of the road, doing some grading work along Harvest Road, removing some accesses along 505th, and then completing the installation of a sidewalk. Everything's done, but the completion of the sidewalk that was proposed between lots 4 and 5 to be a walkthrough from this subdivision to the east. That's something that they're proposing not to do, so they will be bringing back that first phase of that plat to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the board for review. The staff did review the application, the plat. We did provide some comments about additional items that should be added to the letter of credit and improvement agreement, and they've agreed to those things. This just talks about the fact that they can submit the final plat with the addition of the letter of credit and improvement agreement with the items that we've addressed. We did send notices to property owners on the 22nd. Received no verbal comments from the general public. Also sent copies to the City of Ames, City of Gilbert. City of Gilbert waived their right to review, and we received word from the Director of Planning and Housing that they didn't need to see it. A lot of comments really from Planning and Development with regard to the actual plat, and then again asking certain items to be added to the improvement agreement, letter of credit, with regard to filling, grading, seeding, which is really minor work on the cul-de-sac portion, the right-of-way, and then they're going to add some tiling work as well on the north side of that cul-de-sac. One of the comments made by engineering was to add the grade along the edge of the road so that it matches up consistent with what you see here. So it's more flush with the edge. This is actually on the north end here. This is Canada State's second edition. So this is what we'd like to see on the finished grade. This is the issue that involves the tiling need. This is taken when we had some snow. This shows you erosion control in place. And they were doing some utility installation, and then ground froze, so it's kind of difficult to get at, so that's why one of the reasons we asked that to be added. That shows you the cul-de-sac and the finished work that needs to be done there. Evaluation, again, items. This item was before the Board of Supervisors in 2014. You did approve the first phase of the final plat, July 1 of 2014. This is actually part of an outlot. The outlots can be built on provided that the plat is submitted, which is what they've done. They have completed the major improvements, the road, drainage systems, utilities, and then the major grading, and then we've got some minor items that were addressed. The letter of credit is for $70,000 to address those things again, which brings us to the recommendation, which is the Story County Board of Supervisors recommends approval of the major plat, Cameron State Second Edition, as put forward in SUB 15-16. And again, it's resolution 17-16. Happy to answer your questions.
Super. Questions for Jerry, and then we'll ask if the owner or the owner's representative has anything to address before we take action. Any questions for Jerry?
None.
Okay. Kirk, you're shy. You don't want to address anything here. I saw the family at the cafe this morning at 7 a.m.
He didn't take me. Thank you, Supervisors. Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Companies, 106th Street. Jerry's done a nice job of outlining our request today, and we are here to request approval of Plat 2 Cameron Estates. Just wanted to provide a quick update on progress there at Cameron for the supervisors. In Plat 1, we had 31 lots platted. 23 of those 31 lots have been sold. We only have one available market home there, so we have a lot of families living in the development, which is fantastic. and that is the reason for us coming forward here with plat 2. We obviously have a strong demand for these type of lots, and they're conveniently located close to town as well. So, on any questions from the supervisors? Thank you, Jerry.
So just one thing, Kurt, I've said this to you a couple times. This board has not yet weighed in on this, but I believe that it's appropriate. Anytime we talk about this development or any development out there along the west side of 190th that we continue to lay out there, that I do not believe that it is financially reasonable to expect that that long bridge across Squaw Creek will ultimately be replaced. I do see it as a pedestrian bridge. I just don't see it long-term as an automotive bridge, and I don't think the county has the wherewithal to replace that down the road. And so I just want to make sure that we're all above board, that there's a chance that the county could be headed in that direction, because the last thing I want is the people who buy these lots out there north and think they've got a shortcut over to Gilbert High School by using 190th to not have some awareness that this conversation's out there. Again, this board hadn't acted on that, but I like to bring it up every time I see it. So.
Great. Thanks, Rick. And as it was noted in the comments here, we are in the process of acquiring the 10 acres from the Berg family to the east, with anticipation of that being the third plat, potentially to Cameron Estates. It also has the same land use designation of rural residential, so it should seamlessly fit into the last phase of Cameron Estates.
Yeah, and so I just want to note this, and I hope I'm not misspeaking here, but as I recall, the Bergs were one of the ones that were most concerned about this development when you originally brought it forward, and it has really been encouraging to me to watch the way that you worked with them to the point that now they're considering coming on board.
Yeah, we've established a nice relationship with the family, and Lois has determined it's time in her life to move off of the family property, and so we hope to see that effectuated here in the coming weeks. Thanks for your support.
Absolutely. Questions for Kurt before you get away?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, I'll turn the board for potential action.
I would move adoption of resolution 1768 as put forth in case SDB 1516.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Key.
Aye.
Olson. Sanders. Aye. 1768 passes. We're going to take a 5-minute recess, and then we're going to come back with a legal opinion on signing in. Okay, I will call us back into session, and I misspoke. We do not get to hear from Jessica Reynolds just yet, but that's coming for those of you who stay tuned. Right now, we get to talk about asset funding requests. Jeff Kilgroff, hi, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Last month, we talked about the requests that have come before the county for fiscal year 18 asset process, so I provided that spreadsheet to you at that time. I do want to bring your attention to line 107 on that spreadsheet. It's under the general fund allocation. The totals for, I'm sorry, it would be line 109, totals for general basic fund. That total is actually $684,695. What that includes, the formula didn't pick up the $3,825 up above. And then there is an additional $3,042 that last year was allocated to visiting nurse services for the foster grandparent program. We went ahead and had a contract with that agency, and then post July 1st, they contacted all of the asset funders and said they were no longer offering the service. So we have, for the current fiscal year, $3,042 that are unallocated in general funds that we will continue to look at in terms of needs, but I wanted to make sure that total reflected those dollars. So we are at the point in discussing what the proposed amount would be for fiscal year 18. We do have the asset agency hearings that start tomorrow evening and go into Thursday evening, and then we have a panel work session next week.
Outstanding. So now is the point that the board gets to weigh in on what kind of targeted increase, if any, we're going to ask that our asset volunteers shoot for. Clearly, when these requests come in, you know, it'd be great if we could go up 18% in general fund dollars and 28% in lost fund dollars. We don't have that kind of money. So I asked Deb to do some looking and tell us where the City of Ames came in with their targeted increase and United Way came in with their targeted increase.
The Ames City Council approved a 6% increase. United Way approved a 10% increase, and they kind of broke that out into two portions. 5% would go into existing services, and then 5% would go into services that were increasing substantially. So, for example, the dental clinic increase was substantial across all funders, and then we had a couple of new service requests that they want the asset volunteers to consider. And then the Central Iowa Community Services Region proposed an increase of 5.7%, and that's just for mental health and disability services. ISU's current allocation is 4,030. I don't know at this point what their increase is for fiscal year 18. We'll find that out tomorrow evening.
How is the City of Ames rectifying the reality that there are some major increases to a few of the funders?
Yes, they are allowing the volunteers to sort that out through the panel work sessions based on the city's priorities. Knowing that there are that some of those increases are substantial, some better meet the city priorities than others, but they're allowing the volunteers to work that out through the work sessions next week. There were no certain designations like you mentioned with their place on their allocation.
So I look at the numbers, and we've got to have this full conversation of what kind of target we're looking at. First, let's deal with the easy one first, or as I see it, the easy one. Public health funds. We're really the pass-through body for that. I view that as staying status quo, right where it is. Clearly, the requests are down almost 1%, but those are just pass-through dollars that flow to the board health.
I have a question related to the public health fund. As you point out, they're down 1%. If you actually look, the reason they are is the $20,000 moved up to Heartland Senior Services for Meals on Wheels, as they've changed the configuration of that program. So now, if I read this correctly, the $20,000 is coming out of our general budget, or our general fund, the request. So that is, even though the dollar amount is the same on the ask, overall, it's coming out of the general fund instead of a pass-through. So that was the one that...
Well, that's all based on that partnership between Mary Ridley and...
So really, public health funds themselves, the request is up if you take that into
That's
account.
Right.
But as you say, it's tax dollars. So. Are you looking for motions or?
We need to give Deb some direction. I was going to deal with this in three parts, right? General fund dollars, lost dollars, and public health dollars. I thought the public health one was the easiest mm-hmm. for us to get to, so I just threw it out there first for discussion. I will do this all in one motion
okay.
for a targeted increase, if there is an increase. Second, I look at our budget, and it actually lines up pretty well for both our general funds and our lost, our local option funds. And I believe that Story County today has the capacity, in recognition of the new and increased programs that are falling through asset, to go up 6.25%. I think if we go up a pop more than that, so 6.25 would represent somewhere about $43,000 in the general, and it would represent exactly $1,000 in the local option funds. We went up in local option last year from 15 to 16. That was the first increase in local option debt since when? Rough guess.
Approximately 3 years.
Yeah, it was the first one. Now, we have done a good job maintaining reliable increases in our general fund dollars going into asset, but it's hard for me to pencil out how we can go up, knowing how the rest of the preliminary budget is looking, how we can go up a whole lot more than about that 6%. And like I say, I'm proposing you guys as a starting point consider 6.25% increase for both general and loss.
Just so the audience could kind of track with you on that, the numbers in front of you, the entire ask has gone up $123,939. Just to put that in perspective, so the 6% is actually only about half of the total ask. The 12%, if you add them all up, the three sections. My biggest concern is the MIGA dental clinic.
Yes. They were, when they presented us this summer, it was not a good story, and they saw that as something slipping away, and that would be, we'd like to thank you for bringing that up. Of course, I'd like you to expound on the dental component, because I know that that is something that serves mightily in the community, but that didn't seem to have a good story attached to it when I last heard about it.
Yes, their request is up about 266%. The dental clinic, his quick history, was implemented through a Robert Woods Johnson grant a number of years ago, and it started out that they were using dentists volunteering their time to meet the need. They've now had a full-time dentist on staff for 2 years, I believe, and I did read in their latest asset liaison report that they have been contacted by the dental college at the University of Iowa to serve as a training environment for future dentists, and so they're working through some things there to make that a realization, so that could increase capacity. And the dental clinic is surely feeling the demand that primarily the residents using the dental clinic are from Story County, but they are drawing upon from the surrounding counties as needs arise. The county, this board, or the previous board, had provided an additional allocation to the dental clinic last year in the amount of $35,000. That was a separate request that came outside of the asset allocation, and so that was provided to them last summer to help with some operational costs. They had also put together a plan and how to sustain that going forward. There were some billing kinds of things that needed to be straightened out in terms of Medicaid and other private insurance, but they do take in a lot of Medicaid dollars. And the challenges with the new Medicare model through Medicaid has surfaced, but they have dedicated staff now to do that billing, track that billing, and act on any denials or rebilling that need to occur. So these are certainly questions that we will be posing to them again at their hearing to see how they are entertaining the long-term stability of the clinic. They certainly know that that is a major health component here in the community and want to make sure that it works. United Way had also provided them with, I think, $35,000 to help sustain last summer. And then they were also reaching out to Mary Greeley Medical Center.
Did the city of Ames get anything in last summer?
I do not believe they received a request.
Okay. And let's just go back. So the Board of Supervisors kicked in $35,000 unbudgeted money to help the dental clinic with its operations this year. But one of the caveats that was placed on that is this should not be viewed as a $35,000 contribution in perpetuity. This should be viewed as you get an opportunity to stabilize and make sure that this practice is sustainable. And so they didn't come back and request $35,000 more this year. They requested $33,000 more this year. And it, you know, it's a great program, but it's got to be more sustainable than just coming to the county in United Way and the city to fill the entire gap. I know that I personally made a donation after that conversation last summer, and I was really disappointed to see that basically what we talked about last summer does not appear to be heeded in all of this.
I was not as surprised to see the increase, and that is based upon
back to what Medicaid and the field. So knowing that other agencies, what they had gone through, also going back several years, remembering the transitions with the billing mess with the admission center, okay, and what it took to kind of funnel that out. I'm looking at our priorities right now, and three of them tie right in specifically to dental. First of all, the safety, health, and well-being. And we will children and adults, this is primarily adults who get service there because, well, that's uninsured or that they need health subsidy with. Accessible medical services. Dental is a medical service, and we need to have it be accessible. And then prevention and early intervention services. And anybody who's ever been without dental insurance or dental coverage for a while, prevention can go a long way to stopping from the bigger ones. I would like to propose that we, whatever where we end up for a percentage wise, that the $33,000 ask be over whatever that percentage wise is, and that we can tell the asset volunteers, correct, that we've given this $33,000 specifically for the dental clinic, correct?
Typically, what we do with the asset process is, I mean, we set up these target amounts and use the priorities. Right. The mid-year outcomes reports, all the information that the volunteers get, they make the recommendations that then come back to the funders for approval. And then at that point, you want to make any adjustment after the recommendations. That can be...
Yeah, we always have the ability, Lawrence, to kick in more.
Okay.
Always. And that would include Micah coming to us again with a special request for something additional. My comfort level would be a lot greater with saying to our asset volunteers who dig into this really deeply, here's the amount of increase that we can afford to budget. And then if there's anything, and not just referring to Micah, but anybody on here, if there's anything on here that we need to make adjustments to, we've done it. Who did we do it with the last couple of years where we've adjusted? Well, we did it with HARP, where we adjusted where some, didn't adjust the overall dollar amount, but we adjusted where it's going. And I would prefer this board to maintain that ability, but not just in a blanket way, maintain it, throw it out there in front. I also don't want to step on our asset volunteers' toes and say, yeah, we're giving you some money, but you can only use this dollars for this specific service. But not disagreeing with you, I've got trouble. So the total that I'm suggesting that we have, I think it's hard, it's budgetarily, if you're talking about going up more than $50,000 in general, it really starts to negatively impact our flexibility in some other areas in the budget. What I propose for you guys to consider is 6.25%, which off the top of my head is roughly $43,000, $44,000. And so I don't think there's the capacity, the reasonable capacity there to go 6.25% plus a substantial dollar amount as we sit here today. Now, of course, once we finish with the budget process, maybe there's going to be some dollars there where we can do those things. But I would hate for us to make a decision today in direction to our asset volunteers that ties our hands as we're just starting the budget process later this week.
When I look at the asset process and having sat through all of the hearings for so many years, I'm aware of how far in advance we anticipate these agencies have to plan. And that's why I kind of feel that if we can tell them up front, as liberal or as generously as we can, that helps them in budgeting all through the process. I know I've watched, and it's been nice that we have been able, or previous boards have been able to give some money at the end for special projects. But that's why I'm more inclined to go with an increase, a bigger increase. So I understand what everybody's saying about don't limit the asset volunteers. I also don't want to step on their toes. But I really was looking somewhere around more around an 8 or 8.5% increase. Yeah. And then somebody, and then but that's probably priorities that did get discussed if we were going to be in budget further on. It's people. That to me, it's always people. It's people who need.
and it's delivery of services that make a difference.
Yeah, so I don't hear anybody debating with you that these dollars go to a great cause, and it's a necessary safety net in our society, and our asset process, we're really fortunate that our asset process is as strong as it is. As of 6 years ago, I believe the county was not keeping pace with the other two major funders, and we've rectified that through the years. I'm very interested to know, now that I consider Story County really on equal footing in terms of total funding that flows through Story County, really on equal footing.